Ahmed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support through PayPal at funetworktv@gmail.com and patreon.com/funetworktv. And now, here's your show.
Get more out of life. Come often and bring your family.
Hello and welcome to Mensplaining. I'm Stephen Kurzen. We've got a great panel today, and we're going to be talking about a topic which may, well, certainly when the thumbnail goes up or has gone up, people are going to be saying, I can't believe men are talking about whether women are funny. But we're going to be doing it in a conversation probably won't be what you think it is if you're angry that we're even talking about it at all. I just want to mention that Hafiz Nourani is not with us this week. He is still recuperating from that knee injury. So we wish him a quick recovery, and I hope to have him back here with us next week. There are some quarters where people say that women just aren't as funny as men. I don't think any of us here believe that, and we're going to look into where that idea comes from. Let's start by introducing our panel. Start with Andy Willis of AndylandRadio.com. Hello, Andy.
Hi.
How you doing?
What a couple... Weird. I actually spent the worst... this is the worst time to go off social media for like a few days and then come on last night and realize that everything that's been happening over the last couple of days I'm just finding out about now. It's crazy.
Hey, you got a relief for a couple of days not knowing what was going on in the world.
Yes. So.
Yeah. Deslorine comes to us from Inuvik in Northwest Territories. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm doing great. You know, it's we finally have summer here in Inuvik. The river has broken up. The ice is moving. So it's doing great. Yeah, for sure.
Well, there's still ice. It's just moving.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. One of the leading criminal lawyers in Canada based in the West Coast, Paul Doroshenko. Hello, Paul.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I am great. Looking forward to your input. And Jeffrey Brown is joining us. Jeffrey is a producer with Microsoft. He's working on the A-list game Gears of War 5, and he refused, if his employers are listening, he refused to tell me anything at all about the game other than it's going to exist. So he's obviously that code of conduct that you've got him zipped into, that NDA, he didn't break it even for me off mic. Okay, so we'll start going backwards. Jeffrey, do you think that women are less funny than men?
No, I think that every person should be treated equally, no matter where they come from or what race or sex. But I think
that's good platitudes. But do you think that they're less funny?
I think that there's just like an expectation because it's a mainly male-dominated kind of preoccupation. That there's almost like a level of like expectation that they're going to be way better instead of just kind of seeing the set, fresh, right? And I think that perception almost puts them, bumps up the level of talent that's needed. And though, so like maybe if some people were up and coming, that they may not be able to actually do such a good job or they would struggle because the crowds would kind of boo them off the stage, right?
Okay, but you yourself have no problem laughing with a female comedian. I won't say laughing at because that's a whole different thing.
Definitely not. As long as the material is good.
Okay. Dez, how about you? Do you think that women are any less funny as a gender than men?
No, not at all. I think we're hearing a lot of really cool, I'm following topics comics like, Amy Schumer, Sarah Silverman. We're hearing these taboo topics, the things that men have been too shy to talk about, the things that that women have watched, observed of their partners, of men in general, that a lot of these male comics just never touched on. So I think we're seeing a lot of really cool stuff that I'm saying like, oh, what, really? And I don't really know, I don't know women, right? So it's like a lot of this stuff is like, oh, wow, that's a thought that happens or that's something
What do you mean you don't know women? You don't live in a monastery.
No, I don't know. I'm just a real modest man, I guess, who grew up with one girlfriend, turned her into my wife, and she agreed to it. That's great. So I don't know. I'm not well versed in the opposite sex, I guess.
So you're just not, you're saying you're not versed in how they think and what they say to each other when we're not in earshot.
Well, exactly, right? So now you're hearing about all this stuff, and it's like, oh, man, they're just like the bros. That's awesome. And also, yeah.
Actually, often they're much more graphic. Paul Doroshenko, do you have any discomfort when seeing a female comedian? Do you have any expectations that are different versus a male comedian?
No discomfort, but I think it really comes down to, I mean, sometimes it doesn't even come down to the material. Sometimes it comes down to the delivery. I think probably over the course of my life, and I've been around for a while and listening to comedians, I mean, I was most influenced by Eddie Murphy at the start and Bill Cosby back when I had a Bill Cosby album and Monty Python skit. So it was, you know, my first exposure, aside from Sherry Lewis and maybe Betty White and Bea Arthur, was male comedians. But like, I think Samantha Bee, you know, her material is great and she's brilliant, but her delivery for me is a little bit off.
I think her material is terrible. And I think she's terrible. Her delivery is awful. It's constantly yelling and angry and I'm smarter than
but
you.
But that's part of her shtick though. That's
well,
part
it doesn't
of
work. Shtick. Doesn't work I mean, for me. I've never found her funny.
But like Sarah Silverman,
who I know, do her find
delivery,
funny.
Her delivery is perfect. You know?
Yeah, Sarah Silverman I find funny, but I still don't get the cult of Samantha Bee.
I don't find it cult worthy. And it's like it's on once a week, and I don't always watch it. Whereas I watch Colbert and I watch Seth Meyers basically, you know, most nights to watch their monologue.
Interesting you bring them up because we're going to get to late night TV later in the conversation too.
Yeah.
So it's more about.
I think of Sherry Lewis and the and Lamb Chop when I was a kid. You know,
that wasn't funny.
When I was a kid, when you were a child, as exposed to as your early comedian in your life, I mean, she did it for kids. It was funny.
When I was a kid and I saw it, I thought it was this lame ass shit.
Okay, Charlie Horse is one of the most endearing characters in my whole life. Okay.
True. Oh,
all right, we're finding out more about you people than I wanted to. Andy Willis, how about you? Are you okay with female comedians? Do you think that there's any difference between male and female comedians?
I think the difference between male and female comedians is that men can be more self-deprecating and gross and get away with it, whereas women can't. So I think that it's really equal. It's like material, right? Like, it's like what you enjoy. Like, I love Samantha Bee. I look towards her every week. But again, like, I look at someone like Amy Schumer and I'm like, you know, there's more than just being self-deprecating. I think you can do a little bit more. So it's all about what sort of material you like, right? So
I think you've hit the nail on the head, and Paul as well, and is that when female comedians first started really getting noticed, which was during the 80s, I think, when they really started getting noticed, because that was when there was a great boom in stand-up comedy. And stand-up
Paula Poundstone. And
like, yeah. There was stand-up comedy TV shows everywhere. And who did we see? Paula Poundstone, Rita Rudner. And what was their material? Their material was all about being a woman, and it was a, you know, battle of the sexes kind of thing about being a woman and stupid things about men. And the material was lame, but I think that they probably were better than their material, except at that time, people were only willing to accept certain kinds of material from women. Because men are free to talk about whatever, any subject under the sun, a male stand-up can go up and talk about it. But at that time, the expectation was women were only going to talk about being women and how they see the world as women, as opposed to they're a comedian. They're going to talk about everything the same way guys do. So I think that female comedians got a really bad rap early on because of the ones that got spotlighted. And those women were only allowed to work within a straitjacket of material, which was based in gender, as opposed to just like every other comedian, based in experience and observation. So, because, yeah, I mean, Paula Poundstone and Rita Rudner, oh my God, they were just so not funny, and everyone was holding them up as funny because they were acceptable. They didn't ruffle any feathers. They didn't make anybody uncomfortable.
So now really quickly here on that, about female comedians that did make people uncomfortable, that did live their own way, I think she was the exception to the rule, is Roseanne Barr. I mean, she's been one of the most prolific female comics forever and had a show about her whole life. And I think she sort of took it on her own, right? So I think she might be the exception to that rule.
Well, she is an exception, but you know what she got started doing, first drew attention, the domestic goddess thing, talking about, you know, being a domestic at home, being a mom, being a stay-at-home woman. Her material just happened to be head and shoulders above everybody else's, but she started out with the same kind of material, which was her life as a woman, whereas rarely do we hear, you know, all male comedians talk about them being male. It's, you talk about movies, yeah. You talk about, you know, commercials, they talk about whatever, but they can talk about whatever. Now women can too. I think that stigma has lifted, but it's also, for anybody who's ever been in the stand-up comedy world, it's all socialized male. You know, the patterns, the rhythms, and so on, in order to get along with everyone backstage and to fit into the rhythms of expectation on the stage, women sometimes have to adopt a much more aggressive posture, because stand-up comedy is aggressive. I don't care what anybody says, it's aggressive. You're standing up there and everyone's looking at you and you're spewing your truths at them. It's aggressive by nature. And women haven't been for a long time allowed to be aggressive by nature. People see aggressive women differently than aggressive men. So some people might have been made uncomfortable simply by the fact the woman is doing material that if a man had done it, they would have laughed. What do you think about that, Paul?
That actually caused me, you know, you're going in a slightly different direction. But yeah, I guess that is a point. I mean, I haven't worked in a comedy club, and you have. I would imagine the backstage is very different. I've heard that comedians are very catty. And can be quite cruel to each other, and are, you know, angry when somebody succeeds, and
all of that is very true.
You know, yes. I've heard all of these things, and I think, like, women have probably, a lot of them have experienced that in their lives already in many different forms. So they might be slightly better suited to handle that that backstage thing, because they've experienced it and they don't necessarily recoil the same way because it's been part of their lives. But does that affect my ability to appreciate them? Back to the central topic, no, not at all. If anything, it maybe makes them greater. But, you know, of course, yes, they can talk about anything. And yes, I think these days they can, you know, they've moved beyond that situation where they can only talk about women's issues. But there's still this desire to exploit gender for that purpose. I mean, Sarah Silverman, for example, you know, she can talk about anything. She can talk about anything, and she can make anything funny. But she still likes to do the, you know, I'm very sweet, sweet young woman, and now I'm going to shock you with something vulgar, which works for her because she can play both of those very well. And it's extremely effective. And it's effective because she's a woman, but not, you know, it's not an issue of that. It's not an issue of that she can't go beyond that role, right?
Right. Well, I mean, but she's able to talk about more than just leaving the toilet seat up or down.
Well, that's the point.
Sorry, yeah. My phone started playing music. It used to be all about toilet seat up and down and things like that. And yeah, Sarah Silverman plays
Your phone
on...
started playing Madonna, just for the record.
Oh, well, you've got quite an ear. I have a radio station programmed onto my phone, and it just started to play. But yeah, the women can talk about a range of issues, but they can also, I mean, Sarah Silverman, what you're talking about is she's playing with previous audience expectations of what a woman is supposed to sound like and look like and comport herself. And then she's using that and contrasting it with her actual material, which provides a bit of a shock. And she's moving slightly beyond that now because people know what to expect from her. So she can't continue to play the sweet little girl because no one's buying it anymore because she's a known commodity. You mentioned before about watching Colbert every night and Seth Meyers, both of whom I think are great. But there has never been a female talk show host for late night TV outside of Joan Rivers. When they were talking about who was going to replace Jay Leno, there were no real female names being floated. And it is really a boys club on late night TV. Jeff, why do you think that's the case?
I think that's just like the general acting world where, I don't know. I think it's like a male run game. And I don't know. It's just a shame that actually they haven't been considered, because it's the same thing with like the presidency, right? Why hasn't there been a female president? It's just like kind of goes beyond a lot of our comprehensions, I believe. But it's just a general shame that it has not been like opportunities opened up to females.
Okay. What about you, Andy? Would you watch a late night show hosted by a woman? And if so, do you think the late night show would have a different feel or texture if, let's just say, a woman was hosting The Tonight Show, since shows tend to be based around the host's personality?
Well, first of all, the whole way that I consume media is so different, which is why late night has sort of changed. Everything is about clips and clips and clips. So when I watch Samantha Bee, even though it's not the typical late night format, I still feel like I'm watching a late night show. And I'm surprised actually that Ellen DeGeneres was never offered by NBC to do a late night show, because I feel like she would do it really well. I definitely would watch it. I think once there is a female that comes out there and does it, I mean, there's going to be like a dozen. That's just how it works in the business, is that once one thing works, then they do it 10 times over. I do want to say, though, a little shout out for Canadian content. Mary Walsh, Kathy Jones, and Deborah DiGiovanni are like some of my favorite Canadian female comics. And I used to watch This Hour is 22 Minutes, and back in the day when like Mary Walsh would interview Jean Chrétien, I mean, that was just some of the most brilliant Canadian content comedy with women at the forefront. So just a shout out to that.
Well, I'll tell Deborah that you said that. She's been a friend of mine since she was one of the
receptionists. She's brilliant.
She was a receptionist at City TV Much Music. That's where we first met.
I mean, that must have been a kick in the ass, because she must have kept the culture at the office fun.
Yes, she was always very entertaining, so there's no question there. But yeah. You know, the receptionist, we'd walk by and say hello. You don't spend a lot of time lingering in the lobby.
Yeah.
But how about you, Des? Do you think that you would tune into a late night show with a female host? Would you have different expectations as to what you could see and what you're comfortable with?
Well, I mean, that's it. I think that we're at that place now in comedy where it's been said before, you know, I think it's overdue. I think it's sort of like the climate now. Definitely I would tune in for sure. I mean, it would depend on the host, really. It's not one of those things where I could say, oh man, you know, like, wow, a female has got this late night show, I'm going to watch it. It would have to be the right comic for me, right? So it would have to be somebody I identified with, you know. But I wanted to say really quickly, though, that as far as comedy goes, I think when we talk about are women funny? I think we've been laughing at women's jokes for a lot longer than we all thought we have been because of female writers, you know, like Tina Fey on SNL, 30 Rock. We've got Broad City, which is totally being produced by Alana and Abby's female leads. So I think that female writers have definitely been coming out more now, sort of, we're seeing a lot of it, but I think they've always been there too. So a lot of these sort of male-led shows are like, you know, hey, there's a writing team. So maybe we've been laughing at these jokes for a lot longer than we thought.
You know what? That's actually an excellent point. You know, you go back to the old Dick Van Dyke Show and the character Rose Marie played, who was based on a real female comedy writer. But the thing about female comedy writers is, and, you know, my wife is one of the funniest people that I know, just sharp and funny and quick. And I've seen what happens when women go into writers' rooms with men, because it is a very male socialized environment. And women, if they don't speak up and push and get aggressive, then they don't get heard. And if they do push and get aggressive, then some people may be put off by her being aggressive. And I think I'm going to ask you guys, let's look past our conscious, polite mind and really examine, do we see female comedians as different when a woman's up there? Do we have different set of expectations as to the kind of comedy we're going to hear? And have you ever been shocked by something a woman has said simply because it's coming from a woman? It's a lot to think about, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyways. How about you, Jeff?
I think the expectation is always just doing that material that's like how women are different than men, or like their kind of perception of the world. And it's always mainly that topic, or at least my expectation, even just history of seeing female comedians. And that's why I was like even kind of stressing the point of the material, just like it doesn't even matter who the individual is, as long as the material is actually going out of that box of comfort or even just what we've kind of forced onto them, right? And I think that if, as long as they're kind of breaking that mold of what, you know, what industry, what if people are kind of expecting them to be, that's all that kind of matters. But there is definitely an expectation right at the beginning when I see a female comedian that they're going to go that route right away and kind of do a little shock value of like, this is different view than men. But
and if they don't, does it take you a moment to readjust your head, your thinking?
It does, to be like, oh, they're breaking the mold. Is this good or is it bad? But at least it kind of breaks that expectation from the beginning. And if anything, I would like be wanting them to do that more.
Okay. What do you think, Paul?
It's an interesting thing. As we're talking about this, I started to think about Carol Burnett.
Oh, yes.
And that was during a wave of, strong period of the feminist movement. You had a very strong woman standing up, doing comedy, doing skits, leading the show. She was a writer. She does it all still, is out there. She really, it wasn't gender-based at all. I didn't start with an expectation. I just started with an expectation when I watched a show when I was a kid, and still, looking back at it, that it would just be funny. Maybe there is a different expectation when a woman starts, that I expect there to be some, female-related material at the beginning. And Samantha Bee's got lots of female-related material in there at all times. And other people are dropping it away. And I don't know that I start with that expectation, or if it's just something that is that I'm ready to listen to and I'm there for. I guess, I'm sitting here wondering if I have a preference. And I can't say that I have a preference, that's for sure. And when we talk about the late night thing, it gets me down. I hear Ellen DeGeneres being mentioned here, and I never considered her. When they had that discussion, and Samantha Bee was complaining about the fact that there's no women on any late night shows. I thought, okay, well, yeah, but I wouldn't necessarily want her to be the one who did it. And I was trying to cast my mind about who would be capable of doing that. And I didn't really think about Ellen DeGeneres. And there's probably, hundreds of women across the United States who were fantastic comedians who would be capable of doing that. And it's, I guess, an issue of opportunity. But there was a time when, feminism was a popular subject. It became less of a popular subject under George Bush. It's less of a popular subject under Donald Trump. Where feminism was on the rise, and we had Carol Burnett, and we had strong characters. We had Mary Tyler Moore and Betty White. I mean,
and Maude B. Arthur.
And Maude B. Arthur, yeah. So that it's not like that there's been a shortage of female comedians. There may be a gap. Certainly there's more male comedians. Maybe it's probably been easier for male comedians, but we've all been conditioned to have female, comedy in front of us for a long, long time.
Joan Rivers did host a late night show, and it was in the rhythms of regular late night shows, but it only lasted 2 years. She continued to go on doing other shows. Well, and why? I mean, I found her style of comedy. She struck me as, Rodney Dangerfield. He just told joke after joke after joke. He didn't give observations and long, I was here and I was there and take you through a story. It was joke, 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 joke. Very much old vaudeville and Borscht Belt style. And I found her persona was very caustic. And I think that people weren't ready for it back then. I mean, it went off the air in 88, went on in 86. So obviously I think people's sensibilities have changed since then. But I think the reason Ellen wouldn't have been thought of for the late night show is Ellen's style of comedy is, I don't want to say gentler, but it's not her style to be taking bites out of politicians and so on usually. So she's really well suited to a daytime show, and she's doing very, very well with it. Whereas at night, they want somebody who's willing to take to sharpen their teeth and take a bite out of politicians and public figures and so on. And that's just not her thing, which is not a good or bad thing. It's just not her thing. What do you think, Andy?
Well, okay, two things. We all forgot about Chelsea Handler, who had Chelsea Lately on E!
Yeah, but that's not a broadcast. I mean,
it's on network, but yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah. But she was still really brilliant at it.
She's very funny.
And she did a really good job at it. And same thing with, there's the compassion that Busy Phillips brought to her show. Unfortunately, it was canceled. It did kind of feel like a podcast with video cameras. But the one thing I want to mention about Ellen is that she's in a point now where she has to reinvent herself, because her game of being kind is kind of wearing old. And also she's getting a lot of heat because everyone has always known that she's not been kind for years, for decades. So, I think maybe this would be a good opportunity for her to go out there and actually be more critical and less copacetic.
Yeah, interesting points. Interesting points. I think what we're seeing is it's interesting that you bring up that a number of you brought up that there was a time when female either comedic performers or comics were more represented on television, and it was a few decades ago during the 70s, and there's been a decline since then, a bit of an increase in the last 5-6 years, but we consider the 70s to be practically the Stone Age when it comes to, you know, issues of equality for men and women and so on. And yet there was more representation of women in comedy back then with large platforms than there is now. And I think it might put the lie to the idea that we're much more woke now. I think we like to consider ourselves more woke, but the fact is, in many ways, we're still asleep. What do you think, Des?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, like, I personally, from my own standpoint, and that's really all I can control, is I like to find things that are different than myself. I like to see other perspectives. So when I see on Netflix, I see stand-up comedy, I'm looking for people of a different religion, a different sex, a different race than I am. I don't want to see any fat guy comics because I know those jokes. I'm living them every day, right? I want to hear different stories. So maybe I am thinking I'll watch like a female comic, but not just because she's a female, because she's also Mormon and she's got 8 kids or she's, you know, doing all this crazy stuff. So it's about story. It's about context to me rather than just who it is, right?
Okay, interesting you mentioned context, because as we're talking, I'm thinking about black comedians and the fact that black comedy tends to be very different. In black stand-up comedy is delivered very differently. Just as funny, but, you know, you think about someone like Chris Rock. Chris Rock's pretty much always shouting. Eddie Murphy was very loud. And I've been at comedy clubs when a black comedian gets on, and this one particular comedian is very, very middle of the road. And it took the audience a while to adjust to that because they're used to that. Chris Rock adopts the posture of almost those black preachers in the way he delivers things. And we've come to expect black comics to be street. And when they're not street, they're suburbs. I've watched that there's a moment of time where some of the early jokes don't land very well, even though they're good. Because it takes the audience a while to wrap their head around the fact that here's somebody coming out here who's not performing as black. They're performing as a comedian. Have you ever noticed that, Paul? Not necessarily that you've reacted that way, but you've seen that there is an expectation of, because women in comedy are the other still. Because stand-up comedy was always seen as a male, you know, male world. Women are the other. Black people for a long time have been the other. Have you ever noticed that?
Well, I think the expectation is that people are going to be talking about their life experience. And, you know, it may not be Chris Rock's life experience, but he's fulfilling the expectation that he's going to do that. So that's what throws people, I guess, in that circumstance that you're describing, where, you know, somebody comes out and they're the suburbs version of you know, life in the U.S., and they don't have that edge, and that's what throws them. I think back to... Bill Cosby, when I was a kid, he used to be one of the most valuable commodities out there, and he had comedy albums, and we used to listen to them, and they were, you know, it was cleaned up version of the ghetto life, right? And that was really palatable for me as a child to try and understand the way somebody else was living. When Eddie Murphy came along, and he spoke more harshly about it and more aggressively about it, I was ready for that. Would I be ready for, you know, the suburbs version? I guess, yeah, that takes a few minutes to take in.
Okay.
Did I answer any of your question there?
You did.
Things that you do, Stephen, is you throw out something that is really thought provoking in the last 10 seconds, and then you're trying to think to yourself, oh shit, yeah, I don't know what I think about that.
Well, I'll make sure never to go to you first. Jeff, you had more than 10 seconds to think. What do you think about what Paul said or what I offered?
It's a very different, like, or interesting perspective that you are framing it within the black kind of realm. And I do feel that, like, they did kind of get, like, pigeonholed a bit in the expectation as well, where they're a kind of minority group in this, like, I guess, predominantly white male kind of game where almost like that, maybe there was an expectation at the beginning, but I feel that that's kind of come down now, and that like even Chappelle isn't always a kind of a shock or yelling. Like, he has bits that are kind of that style, but I definitely think that he tries to push the boundaries, and even doing some things where he's been gotten a lot of flack from touching some subjects that are very, like, you know, on the realm of, you know, taboo, right? And so I think that that's one of the, where they've actually broken the mold a bit, where I think the female kind of comedians haven't yet done that completely. And I think it just, maybe it's just time that it takes.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, I think many of us are in agreement that, you know, to sum it all up, women are capable of being just as funny as men. Women were for a long time pigeonholed to do only certain kinds of comedy, while men had the entire world to you know, 360 degrees of content to work with. And they got, as a result, they got the spotlight, but they got pigeonholed. And it made it difficult for female comedians afterwards to move forward and do things that were, you know, different. And there's also still a societal, it's less now, it's ebbing quite a bit, but there was always a societal expectation that women are going to talk about different things than men. And when they don't, it you can make people uncomfortable. And I think that we are moving away from that. I think we're still a long ways from, you know, the representation of women in comedy, be it stand-up or television comedy, that we had in the 70s. And that ought to tell people something. But I think it's been an interesting conversation, and you guys have all brought up some very interesting points. So I want to thank you. Does anyone have a point they want to bring up that they haven't had a chance to voice? Okay.
I do.
Lucille Ball. You know, this guy, it goes way back. It just, there's been a long, long history of female comedians. It's just an issue of, and the point you just said was, will we get around to it? Well, part of the shtick of being a comedian is to talk about subjects sometimes that are taboo, and to make you uncomfortable, and to start off by being uncomfortable. So I think it's sort of the natural progression. That's fine for them to, you know, Dez is out there looking for something that's going to educate him at the same time, right? So I think it's fine if we're uncomfortable when we're seeing a comedian. We can assess them whether or not we find them funny or whatever. That's another thing. But it really comes down to the greater populace, whether or not they're accepted and whether or not they're found to be funny and they can make a living at it, I guess. There's probably a lot of brilliant comedians with some great material that's only going to appeal to 1% of the population who are never going to succeed in their lives as comedians. That's okay, well, too.
I will, Andy, come to you in a second. I will say, Paul, to sort of build on what you said, I find that the confidence of female comedians when they're up there on the stage is stronger than the confidence of male comedians. I find a lot of male comedians are doing the comedy and yet feeling very insecure. And on stage, they're very protective of their material and very upset if it doesn't hit and so on. Whereas the kind of confidence you need to have to be a woman to stand up on stage and do comedy, it requires more of them than it does a guy, because they're moving into a territory which has traditionally been male. So they've obviously already got a greater sense of self and a greater sense of confidence than the average male comedian does when going on stage for the first time. And I've found that female comedians are just, they command the stage in a much different way, in a way that they really own it. And yet I've seen that a male comic follow a female comic and just, you can tell the person's not comfortable in their own skin, because it's easier for a guy to get in to do stand-up comedy. And just the fact that it's tougher for women means that the ones that do make it usually are better and much more confident than some of the guys who get in there who are just, I don't even know how they made it off amateur night. Andy, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think white audiences have always been exceptional voyeurs of black comedy and black culture. And I think that the Puritan standard is really all about being refined and held back and restrained. Yet with that same standard, we forget to measure it against people like Robin Williams, who was like, I mean, the blackest white guy alive. You know, I mean, the stuff he would do, I mean, he was screaming and yelling and doing all that other sort of stuff. But there's tons of comedians that are like that. I just think that we look at black comedians and think it's just them that does it. But no, everyone does it. I guarantee you, black audiences will look at white comedians and be able to find at least 5 or 10 that are doing just what we're saying black comedians do.
Well, I mean, I also think that women have a license to go up there and make comments about men and poke fun at men and sort of stereotype views of men. And some of the stereotypes are true, by and large.
But right.
Men can't go up there and make fun of women the same way, because it's just the complexion of that comedy is seen very differently.
Dude, Ron White. I mean, I just watched a Ron White special, and that, it was like, there was a lot of punches towards women. It was done in his funny way, you know, but I mean, like, I think men punch at women just as hard as women punch at men. I think women are just a little bit better at, when it comes to being insecure, because they have to face insecurities in their life all the time, whereas men necessarily don't. When I worked at this restaurant that I have a stand-up night, the women were totally just chill doing their thing. The men were stressing out, freaking out. A lot of them were just kind of, you know, drunks and druggies. But yeah, I mean, I think the women hold themselves a lot better in comedy than men. Sophie Buttle, up and comer. She's Canadian. She's fabulous. Everyone should check her out too.
I will. And I think that basically men are insecure, because men going up there and sharing their comedy that they created is the equivalent of a man standing up there and asking that people to judge his penis. In a sense, you know what I mean? That's the way they come across. It's like, you're not laughing. My penis isn't big. Women don't have that particular problem with their genitalia. Any final comments, Dez?
No, honestly, just grateful to be a part of it again. Thank you very much for including me. Again, some really good points brought up here. I'm just looking for diversity, I think, right? And for me, diversity is anybody who, like I said, isn't me. So I'm having a good time with it, and I like comedy. I think we're in a sort of a renaissance right now. Like I said, I brought up Broad City earlier, one of my favorite shows on television, because it's so gritty. It's so real. It's kind of like disgustingly funny, I think. So it really draws me in, and I kind of like that dirty humor. But yeah, I'm just having a good time up here, guys.
Okay, great. Jeff, any final comments?
No, like I agreed with a lot of the comments, very similar. But I just think it's a shame that actually the comedians, like, them themselves aren't supportive of each other. They are so critical and a little more uptight, because they are in the game together, and it is enough to share. It's kind of like, I don't know, musicians aren't the same. I just don't know why comedians are that way.
Well, they're actually in Canada, there isn't enough to share. Even if there was only one comedian, it would be difficult to make for that person to make a living.
So ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. It just amazes me.
If you want to be a successful Canadian comic, go to the United States or the UK. Everybody I've known who's been successful in comedy has left. Maybe left and come back. But when they come back, Canadian entertainment treats them differently. They've got legitimacy because they have the magic pixie dust of being in the US on them. That's typically Canadian and unfortunate. All right. I want to thank all of you for being here today. Jeff Brown is working diligently on Gears of War 5, one of the top franchises in video games. One of my favorite video games, certainly as far as shooters and stuff go, it's probably my favorite. And despite my buttering him up, he's still not going to tell me anything about what to expect from the upcoming game.
You'll see.
Yeah, the cone of silence has worked on you. Thank you, Jeff, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Also, we've got Des Loreen coming to us from, how do you pronounce it, Inuvik or Inuvik?
Inuvik, the second one, yeah.
Inuvik. Okay, coming to us from Inuvik in the Northwest Territories. He is a podcaster. He is a broadcaster. He is a writer, producer. He's a multiple threat on several different horizons. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Of course, Andy Willis. We did a show without you last week, Andy, and it just wasn't the same.
It was terrible.
Okay. You're a little biased. It was a great show, but I know that I kept thinking I have to go to Andy, and then Andy wasn't there. So I'm glad you're back this week. So,
can I just say my favorite game to play? Yes. I want to say my favorite game to play is the Patreon drop a coin in the slot game. So everyone get to Patreon. Yeah, donate your money.
Thank you. I will get to that in a second, but thank you for bringing that up. And of course, Paul Doroshenko, who the work he does isn't funny, but he himself obviously understands comedy. One of the top criminal lawyers in the country with Acura Law. Thank you for joining us, Paul. Actually, it's not Acura. It's Acumen
Law.
Acumen, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if you go to YouTube, you can find some of my music videos, which are damn funny.
Oh, his music videos are...
This is true.
Yeah, they're A1. They're country music. It's A1. You got to check them out. It's great Canadian content. It's great content, period. But it's nice when something comes from Canada that isn't crap. Thank you, Paul, for joining us. And yes, the Patreon drop a coin in the slot thing. We've discovered that we have every month on our FU Politics podcasts, based on the best projections from analytics that we have, we're probably getting about between 40 and 50,000 listens a month. That's a lot of people out there. And I just think that if every person was to give $1, either through patreon.com, and that's patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, or at PayPal, and you direct it to our email address, FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. If everyone gave just a buck, just a dollar, we would be able to take to move this stuff to the next level. We have computers that need servicing and repair. We have people who would like very much to be paid for their work. We have projects that need a little bit of seed money to get going, you know, further forward. A lot of our music programming that we want to do, you know, go big, not go home. You guys can help make all of that possible. You can help take these ideas and make them reality, put meat on the skeleton, so to speak. And you can do that by just, I'm just asking right now, a dollar. Whether it's a dollar a month subscription on patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, or you give a dollar through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. $1. That's all I'm asking for. $1. If you've enjoyed these programs, I don't think it's too much to ask for $1. And that if everyone gives, or even a good percentage of people give $1, this is the model that Obama and then Bernie Sanders used. Small donations add up. So if you can just give us a buck. It's all we're asking for, a buck. It'll help move things forward and pay our expenses and allow us to build to the next level, which we really, really want to do. That's it. I'm Stephen Kersner. Thanks to the panelists. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Mansplaining on FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network. For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus. This is Fun, the FU Network.